What does it even mean to live a legacy? Often we think of legacy in terms of what people might think of us when we're dead, but then we're dead. We're going to instead explore a living legacy. This is your host, Danielle Strickland. This is the Right Side Up podcast. And this is a partnership venture with World Vision, Strong Women, Strong World. This is going to be challenging and inspiring as we interview people from all over the world in all kinds of different sectors, living a life now that will matter later. A living legacy. Buckle up. This is sure to be challenging and inspiring, and I'm glad you're here.
Well, hey, friends. This is the last, sadly, this is the last episode of this incredible season that we've been living a legacy. And the conclusion, really, is me. And some of the things that I've learned, some of the things I've been reminded of, some of the things that I might that might matter as we wrap up this season. I know I haven't heard from heaps of you, but I have heard from a few of you that you've really enjoyed these and that they've been very challenging. And that's the idea, that they would be equal parts inspirational and challenging. I think that's how we change the world, is we're challenged and we're inspired, kind of in step by step. And I think, you know, for me, there's a bunch of things, you know, about 14 years ago. So next year, I'm hoping to relaunch an anniversary edition of a book that I wrote called The Liberating Truth: How Jesus Empowers Women. And basically, I grew up in a setting where women, both a culture, so in Canada, culture, very empowering culture, equitable culture, and also in a church setting, in a context of the Salvation Army, which was very equitable as well. So the origin story of the Salvation Army is that actually Catherine Booth, the co-founder with her husband, William Booth, believed very deeply that women were created equal and had equal measure of the Holy Spirit and had equal capacity to lead. And so right from its origin, it kind of put up its hand as a movement and said, women, welcome here. And women flocked there, so much so that William Booth once said, my best men are women. And he deployed them equally, whether no matter what their marital status was, no matter what their standing was, no matter what their education was, he just was like, if you're gifted, we need you. Let's go. And then it just, poof, it spread, as you might imagine, because women came from everywhere looking for a place to serve. And so that's the origin story. And I grew up in a setting where I had tons of female mentors. I had people that preached. I had, you know, lots of leaders that led in different ways, with different capacities, with different gifts, lots of women everywhere. And they were just normalized as leaders. I never even thought of myself as a female leader until somebody once said, hey, you're a pretty good leader for a woman. Thank you very much. So for me, I just kind of grew up with this concept of like, this is, you know, and then it wasn't until I started speaking and visiting and leading in other areas, in other places, like multi-denominational places. I remember in the UK, which is where I first published this book, where people would come up to me after I would speak and say, like, how are you doing this? How are you doing this? And I'd be like, well, I don't. Like, I do it like everyone else does it. Like, what do you mean? Like, I didn't even get the question. And then finally, I realized after I talked to a bunch of them that they couldn't, that they couldn't, that they had been told their entire lives that they couldn't, that they had to be quiet, that they weren't allowed to teach, that they weren't allowed to preach, that they weren't allowed to lead. And so there's this whole, and then what I realized is then I was like, oh, wow, wait a minute. I started doing deeper and deeper and deeper justice work. And I started realizing that in all of the justice, injustice, and oppression areas, whether it's human trafficking or poverty or war, you know, conflict or, you know, I mean, pick a thing. Women are disproportionately oppressed. It's the one thing that we have in common around the world. It's not a great thing, but it is the one thing that is in common. And so that kind of got me thinking, wait a minute, because what I used to do is people that would complain about like, you know, I can't speak here or I don't have equal opportunity in the boardroom or whatever it is. I'd be like, look, first world issues, you know, we got it pretty good. Think about what's going on around the world. We talk about, you know, children are being sold, like little girls are being sold off into marriage, so-called marriage, which is really just a human trafficking concept of women as property and, you know, female mutilation, you know, like all of these things happening. I'm sort of like, you know, guys, come on. And I didn't realize until I actually did a little bit deeper study of the gender root at the heart of every oppression in the planet, that these things are connected. That even though, you know, I used to think it was like a little root, like just a little tiny like weed or something in the garden on this end of the world, you know, in Western world where we actually have rights and protections under the law. And I couldn't figure out why I just pull the weed out. But what happens is when you pull on that weed, it's connected. It doesn't come out. You just keep pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling. And basically that little weed that sometimes shows itself in the way we view ourselves or the way we feel about ourselves or like the cultural expectations around a lack of equity, you know, board, all the things, the way that it manifests on this side of the planet is deeply connected to the same root on the other side of the planet where it shows up in more severe and extreme forms. And when I realized that, when I figured that out, that was when I was like, oh, wait a minute. We have got to talk about this because this isn't just something that's affecting some women somewhere, you know, in Western context. This is something that is literally at the root of oppression around the globe. This is a thing that we have got to talk about. And so what I loved about this season is that it had both of those elements to it. And what I love even about the vision at the beginning when we talked to Catherine, I love so many things about her vision and her understanding, her experience. I mean, she's just so wise and seasoned and hopeful. I mean, those are things that don't always go together. So I'm just thrilled to be working with her at all. But I love this idea of like what happens here matters there and what happens there matters here. Like there is a connection that matters. And I think this has hopefully been captured in this podcast season, but it's something that we actually have to keep on paying attention to. If you don't know, every Thursday, I dedicate Thursdays to a prayer for women whose voices cannot be heard. And we publicly pray. So there's a bunch of us that do this. We pray in public somewhere. We just like go outside and pray. I often pray on my walk or whatever. And I just pray and I mention women who cannot raise their own voices in public. Because I promised my friends in Afghanistan and in Iran, and then also victims of sexual abuse who cannot name themselves publicly without being annihilated, so that I would speak out on their behalf. You know, they have a voice and they need to be heard, but I'm going to pray until their voices are heard for in their own settings. And so, in some ways, it reminds me of that too. Sort of this idea that like we're forever linked, and that if I forget that, if I do something where I just take for granted the things that I've been able to do or the platform that I have or the privilege that I have or the finances that I have or the influence that I have or, you know, whatever, the reach that I have. And I forget that it's deeply connected to the woman who doesn't have it. And what I do with it matters as a result of that. And if we are at all committed to the end of oppression, which I am, and the end of poverty, which I am, and I hope you are too, then that connection matters. And hopefully you felt some of that on this podcast. So what else? I made a quick list here, and maybe it'll be helpful to you to just kind of review what you've heard. First of all, nothing changes without intention. I heard that over and over and over again in almost every interview. You know, all of these things, many of these things are not rocket science. Much of what we talk about in the gender equity space is expert. You know, this is like researched. This is historical. This is like social change. This is development, you know, best practices. This is UN level strategic ideas. So that, you know, it's not for a lack of knowledge, but here's the thing is even if it's a simple thing, simple, that doesn't mean it's easy. So to actually just get to it, intention is required for something to change. So the idea of change without intention is just wishful thinking. That's what that is. And actually, there's been generations of movements and, you know, development organizations and NGOs who have said, yes, yes, the empowerment of women, but they don't actually do it. They don't measure it. They don't say it. They don't prioritize it. There's no intention behind the strategy. And so it's just business as usual. So what I loved about the Strong Women, Strong World concept, and Catherine sort of kicked us off with this, and you felt it in all of the episodes, I hope, is that there's a genuine intention behind each of these areas of living differently now that might impact generations. Money matters. You know, I learned a lot, you know, and that was one of my first introductions to the Strong Women Strong World team at World Vision was this summit that they have in New York. And they spent the morning just kind of discussing about how we use our money and how money matters. And so that beautiful conversation with Emily Nielsen-Jones and Charity Wallace about money matters. I mean, it's not everything, but it is something. And it can make a massive change in the way the world runs. I love that. I love the high level vision of that. You know, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars that can be leveraged for other women around the world to make their own way to their own empowerment with their own gifts and their own skills and their own business savvy. I liked the vision, high level vision of $13 trillion added to the global economy if we could empower women in business. You know, I love that. But I also loved the tiny thing in that. I loved that women can challenge and change the way we make and use money now. I liked Emily's existential angst, to tell you the truth. I like that she's able to say it in ways that we can relate to and understand. I don't know if I feel okay about how life is unfolding, and I want to do things different. And there's a disruption in that, and there's an intention in that. And then there's just like this small little change. It's not a huge change, but it's a small little change, and it makes such a big difference. So I loved that. That was a takeaway for me. Just this money matters, and the tiny little things we do to change what we do with our money will matter. And the big, huge vision about how money in the hands of women might make a big, huge change. Just today on the news, actually, there was a woman who's given $1 billion towards education scholarships for students that can't afford tuition for education. And it was, you know, and somebody had put up sort of just like a little chart about like all of these billionaire guys who are like flying to the moon or like buying, you know, social media platforms to fool around with. And then there's like the woman who's giving it away for kids to get an education. You know, like it's, and I had this glimpse, I had this like memory back to like, do you think it will matter if women own 2/3 of the Western, you know, the wealth of the world? And I had this big like, yes, it will. Yes, it will. God grant that it will. So that was amazing. I think what we do, you know, our decisions and the way that we live now can change the trajectory of a generation is a lot to say. You know, like that's a lot to say. And when you're in the thick of the here and the now, it doesn't feel like that, you know. But actually talking to Leslie and Caleb Chung helped us with that. Right. I mean, it helped me on multiple levels because it helped me remember Leslie and her husband's trajectory was changed by people who were helpful and by, like, you know, a dad who took great risks and decided to change things for his kids. And then, like, next generation on, you know, you've got this 10-year-old kid who's just like, I want to make a difference too. And I want to live for others. And I want to live in a way that, you know, and you have this and you just see this like legacy. That is this trajectory of generational shift. You know, the fancy word for that, of course, is redemption lift. And, you know, this is, again, this is something in my own family I've encountered where my parents came out of sort of poverty and abuse and oppression and cycles of violence. And then somebody interrupted that, you know, redemption interrupted that. And they were saved from that. And then this next generation, now my kids have grown up in places where they have not ever even known that. They've never known, thank God, you know, but for the grace of God, but they've never even known that. So what is their, you know, so their legacy, I mean, and you can see, and redemption lift ends up being a problem when the lift is so high that the people that are on the receiving end now, like generations later, are disconnected from the early story. You know, so what I loved about the Chunks, and what I love even about my own story is that redemption lift is real. It's happening. You know, we're talking about like drop out of high school to like maybe we could finish high school to maybe we could get a university degree to maybe we could, you know, and this slow redemption lift. But I loved that with the Chunks, you know, Caleb at 10 already, even though he's far removed, I mean, he's grown up in a home where he has not known violence or rejection or marginalization or oppression like his dad did if you watch the movie, but he's still connected to that story. That story is still a part of his ethos. He understands that what he's been given is actually he's able to receive open-handedly, but then also give away as well. So I think there's something beautiful about that connection piece to our stories. And that's when redemption lift, rather than just separating us and we're off and we have no concern anymore for anyone who came from similar places that we did in our family history, that's where that connection begins to really matter. That this, you know, this upward mobility is actually to help other people climb their way out of poverty too. So that was really, really inspiring. I hope you enjoyed that too. It was really neat to talk to Caleb. Also, he's just a really well-spoken kid. I was like, I wonder if he's going to go into politics or policy or something. But anyway, I loved empathy being spoken about over and over again. You know, this leading from the heart, whether it's a crisis, you know, of conscience, of heart, existential crisis, or whether it's feeling, you know, like this compassion. You know, people don't know this, but the root word of compassion, when the Bible talks about God being a compassionate God or Jesus being moved with compassion, that root word of compassion is the word womb. You know, so this might help us understand why it matters that women are empowered, because women are moved. And that idea of birthing something different, you know, so I love that with Emily Ogutu from Kenya. I loved how when she was a little girl, she was moved to discover. She was curious. She was like, how can this be the reality? Like, we got to change it. People shouldn't be getting sick all the time. Like, what's wrong with the water? But then also to go back, you know, now, again, redemption lift, going back to Kenya and talking to these girls and being this representative of someone who is moved and is still being moved. And this idea of leading from the heart, but bringing your brain too, I feel like that, you know, that's, Shannon was really good with that too. Marquez, you know, she, this genius researcher, and she really shared about adaptation being the best practice for development. And I would add, and living, like adaptation, being able to adapt to new information, being able to adapt to new technology, being able to adapt to new practices, to new cultural norms, to new perspectives. You know, this idea, I would call this being curious over judgmental. It's like a superpower. Curiosity is a superpower. But, you know, a compassionate curiosity, right? Like a adaptation, a willingness to actually change. That was next level for me. And I think these are things that I know, but again, they were like reminders and invitations. And maybe these are maybe some even decent questions, you know, like, in what way are you letting your heart lead? In what way are you being moved with compassion these days? Maybe some other questions around, in what ways are you adapting? Like, and back to this kind of investment conversation about money, you know, even the idea of like, when's the last time you asked how you're making your money and what your investments are doing? Like, and when have you adapted that strategy? I think it's fascinating. I think that idea of adapting, of changing. I remember this conversation I had with Bob Goff, a friend of mine, and we were co-leading at this event together. And he was sharing about his life story and his trajectory. And I remember he said, you know, let me introduce you to Bob number one. You know, Bob number one was a fancy college hotshot. And then Bob number two, you know, fell in love and lived for something greater than himself. You know, and Bob number three was this high-powered lawyer and was pretty successful. And then Bob number four was like, I don't want to do this with my life. Life's about more than making money, and throws his keys on the desk and has a dream. Bob number five. Anyway, he's going on all these different Bobs. And I'm just like, he's at Bob number seven. I'm like, how many Bobs are there? I mean, this is crazy. And I remember him saying, wrapping up the top talk like this, you know who I feel really sorry for? I feel sorry for people who are still on number one. And when he said that to me, and when I heard that, something shifted in me. Something shifted in me. And I think sometimes we feel locked in. We feel locked in by the profession we chose. We feel locked in by the construct that we've lived by. We feel locked in by a theology that we might have once thought we understood. You know, we feel locked in by practices or methods or methodologies or, you know, all of these things. And we're not. You know, we're not locked in. Adaptation is best practice for living. And for development, and for money, and for fill in the blank, and for creativity, and for using our art, and for play, you know. Carrie's Higgins was an excellent interview to me. And I loved the strategy she gave of getting to places in her training that hurt. And that the strategy to get through it was not to repress it or ignore it or not go there anymore. The strategy to break through the hurt was to acknowledge it, and then acknowledge that this is supposed to feel like this, and then make some coping strategies. Like, what are you going to do when you feel this? so that when you do feel hurt or like you can't make it, or this is just harder than you thought, or maybe you can't go on, indeed you can, but not through this, like, you know, terribly detached and repressed version of that, but through a genuine acknowledgement and then a strategy. And I love that. That just keeps speaking to me, Carrie. Thank you for offering that. If you're listening, thank you for offering that. It's a little crazy. I'm interrupting my own self and my own podcast for a little ad break. But this is just to say there's a couple things we mentioned and we're mentioning in this episode. One is Strong Women, Strong World. So we keep directing you there. We want to. This is on purpose, by the way. We love the work that they're doing. So just go to strongwomenstrongworld.com and you'll find out more about all the different things that you can join in there. And we'd love for you to get acquainted with them and partner with them and collab with them in whatever way fits your gifts and interests. And the other thing I mentioned in this episode, or I mentioned at the end, if you haven't heard this, I'm going to talk about Brave. Brave Global is a catalytic movement for girls, and it's designed to prevent trafficking before it starts. And it is one of the most hopeful, inspirational, challenging, beautiful things I've ever seen. And so if that's something you're interested in, go to braveglobal.org, braveglobal.org, and you can find out more about what that is and how you might be able to host something in your own community that would disrupt the status quo and would actually inspire a generation of girls. Enjoy the rest of the episode. All of these guests. And then, of course, Jenna and Liz, you know, so those are the last two. So Liz, hers is dropping this week. Liz is a delight. And you probably caught that. We can talk. I mean, I feel like Liz and I could sit in a room and talk for like a whole day and it would be fun. So we really, I mean, we just really tried to keep ourselves a little bit disciplined. But you can tell in that episode, we're not that disciplined when we get together. We're just like, but I love the way that Liz is a disruptor of the status quo. Like, there is no question she disrupts almost everything she touches. Like, it, but in the best, most infectious, fun, loving, gracious way. So, like, you're being disrupted and you're not even quite sure that's what's happening because you're so enamored. You know, you're so like, in love with this process. Like, she oozes life. As a matter of fact, she reminded me of a young Dale Hansen. I don't know if you, a young Dale Hansen and yes, so many. I mean, oh gosh, so many people. But Dale Hansen as somebody that is like awakened, you know, awakened. That's what it, many people on this podcast actually remind me of, people who are just awake, you know. And so many of us go through life just kind of sleeping, going through the motions, feeling like we're locked in. But this idea of transformation, you know, just awakening to the possibilities. And then also, like Dale, there are some real practical things attached to that. So yes, whimsical, funny, creative inspiration with these like real practical, this is how we change things. And I love that. I love that in that book, which Strong Girls, Strong World. I hope you have gotten a copy of that, or you find the link for that. That's a wonderful overview and very practical guide. But also with Liz, you know, how do I get fashion that isn't exploitative? You know, how do I do that? How can I look good and be good at the same time? And then she just figured it out. You know, and if you don't know, she does have a bestseller book called Beginner's Pluck, where she talks about the strategies of not knowing the difference between what you should do and what you can do. And that it's actually a superpower, that you can end up doing things that if you hadn't known better, you wouldn't have tried to do because it would have been too daunting. And it's a beautiful book about being a beginner and how much gift there is in that space. So Liz, and then one of the other things I think Liz spoke about, which I think is really key here too, is how connection matters, and deep connection, like friendship. And one of the things that I've noticed when I have led other women in various things, I do a thing called Women Speaker Collective, where I actually help women communicators learn to use their voice more effectively and collaboratively. And because one of the things we realized is that one of the greatest threats that women face is this idea that other women are competitors instead of collaborators. And that's one of the great spirits of this podcast, I think, that that this is a collaboration, that we all need each other, that everybody has a part to play, and that everybody has a gift that they're bringing to the world. Whether that's the fact that you are like a Microsoft genius, you know, like our beautiful friend who just oozes transformational joy when she speaks. I loved talking to her. Or whether you're figuring out fashion, you know, or whether you're an Olympic athlete and you just know how to do hard things because you've trained yourself to do it, or whether you're an investment specialist and you're like an advisor to the president on, like, you know, financial stuff like charity, or, you know, whether you're Catherine Compton and you're just like, you touched this beautiful global thing and you went, how do I do this with the rest of my life? And then you spent the rest of your life doing it, you know, like this idea that we're collaborators and not competitors. And then I guess we kind of ended it. You know, we wrapped it all up with this interview with Jenna Rice-Sarama. And, you know, I've been following Jenna for some time, and I've read her book, Altogether You, which I highly recommend. And this internal family systems therapy, which is kind of changing therapy and helping so many people around the world. Richard Schwartz is the founder of that therapy, and his book is called No Bad Parts, if that's something you want to read. But what's interesting about Richard's journey, actually, in his own telling of the story, is that he entered as a psychiatrist, kind of scientist. He would say that he entered this whole sphere as an atheist. But one of the key components of internal family systems therapy is to actually find and access what he would call your true self, or what Jenna, as a Christian, would call your imago Deo, you know, the image of God within you, this core self, where you were created in God's image. Every time you would access that in somebody, he would realize that inherently inside of everybody is this design of goodness, you know, of compassion, of kindness, of clarity, of courage. And from a scientific, atheistic psychiatrist perspective, he said he was taught that was impossible. That if you didn't have some sort of developmental input into your early days and you lacked that, you were hooped. You're hooped. You're just, the best of luck to you. We'll give you some coping strategies, but you're never probably going to get this core need met. And he said, as he discovered, intentionally sought out this core being in every person, this imago Deo, you know, this true self, he discovered this existed already, this inherent goodness. And he says in his book, what that meant to me was it was a miracle. I was witnessing a miracle. I saw a miracle. And what that means now is that I'm no longer an atheist. Like, there is no explanation for this in the psyche. There's no explanation of this in human behavioral therapy. The only explanation for this is that there is a divine being who has given each person this beautiful, beautiful core self. And they're even surprised by it, you know, in his therapy practices. And I thought that was a beautiful way to end this one, because holistic self-care, you know, like being curious about the way that you're designed and being at peace with yourself and learning to love yourself and adapt and get to know yourself and to do it out of healthy and beautiful ways, you know, that's core to everything. We don't just want to drive people and push people and break people and burn people out. You know, that's not the way. We know that doesn't work. But so there's something about paying attention to, like, ourselves that matter in this. But also that there is this inherent goodness. There is this core self. And this exists in every human, every girl who has been told this doesn't exist. You know, in every woman who has been, you know, that core self has been told to quiet up and pushed down. and that there is at the heart of this oppression against women, whether it's financial or institutional, whether it's systemic or whether it's personal, whether it's internalized oppression, it is a core self conversation. In the end, you have value. You are worthy. You are made in the image of God, of Creator. You are inherently compassionate. You are inherently worthy. You are inherently good. And much of the work that we have to do in our own personal lives, as well as around the globe, is to get rid of everything that's in the way of that message. Every single thing, everything. And we have different words for this. You know, oppression or injustice. We also have sin. We also have trauma. We also have generational, you know, cycles of abuse. We have abuse itself. You know, we have all these different words for all of these things that are in the way of the core thing of who we are emerging. And so I just thought it was a beautiful way to wrap up this season, because I need you to know that again. And maybe we just need to remind ourselves of that every day. I hope you do, that you are able somehow to come into agreement with who God says you are, which is good, which is worthy, which is strong, which is courageous, which is compassionate, you know, and life-giving. And we need you to access that part of yourself. And it's when you access that part of yourself, that core part of who you are, that you then can do all of these beautiful things that all of our guests have been able to do, right? It's then where you can say to the career that is enticing to just keep climbing some corporate ladder, it's you can say, actually, I got it. I'm there. I have enough. And maybe there's something more than money to be earned, to be impacted, you know, or you can get to a place where you're like on a Forbes list of the 20 best speakers of the world, like Liz is, and go, you know, I'm not really aiming to be richer or more successful. I may mean to be connected and real and authentic. I may mean to live differently in a way that's life-giving, you know, or maybe you can be someone who spent your whole entire life in very difficult subjects and places in the world that are the poorest and most challenging places on the earth, and still be hopeful and have a mischievous twinkle in your eye, like Catherine. You know, I don't know. There's a, you know, hopefully a full menu of different personalities and different gift mixes and different callings and different places of service and different stories and trajectories. And what I want more than anything is for you to find yourself in that story too. You're in that story too. Your life matters, and that you would tap into that inherent goodness that is, you know, Creator moving through you, you know, and that this would be a disruption from the status quo, which is intolerable. Thank you, Emily. And it would be an invitation at the same time. So you'd be challenged with the disruption. You'd ask yourself some of these questions. Is what I'm doing worthy of my time and energy and gifts? And how am I even doing that? You know, is it possible for me to join in with the company of many, many other people around the world and making the world good? Have I even just in my own mind given up on the world and given up on my capacity to do anything with it? And maybe you need to be challenged and disrupted. There is no changing anything without some disruption. So I'm hoping some of this was disruptive. But at the same time, also be inspired. You are already inherently good. You are already inherently worthy. And from that place, if you could tap into that place with this compassionate curiosity to discover even more, I wonder what might be possible. I wonder what decisions you could make. I wonder what choices. I wonder what kind of light you would walk in when you know that you are already enough, actually, and that what you have already is this beautiful gift that the world needs and the world could use and would be a gift that keeps giving back to you. So those are some of the things. And there are a lot of things, you know, there are a lot of things in the middle of this, you know, just last week when I was thinking about, you know, what are the things I'm taking out of this podcast? I was on my way to an event called Brave, and Brave events are this thing that I helped co-found called Brave Global. And it's this catalytic movement, we call it. It's a It's a movement that helps communities, faith communities or communities anywhere, get intentional about preventing girls, vulnerable girls, from being trafficked. So this started, you know, many years ago when we discovered that up to 80% of domestic sex trafficking victims in America, Canada, were from the foster care system. And we started realizing, those of us, I'd worked for 25 years in getting women out of sexual exploitation. So I've done this my whole life. And every single story, you know, when I finally had the light, you know, I finally was like, oh, wait a minute, this is so familiar. And I put the dots together that this is not just one story at a time. This is like a systemic problem facing girls. All the stories, 11, 12, 13 years old is when they first get targeted by traffickers. And we just had this crazy question, you know, which was, what if we could get there first? What if we could get there first? And we had this, you know, sort of flipped idea of like, we've heard, you know, it's talked about through the stats and like the system as though girls are the problem. But actually, what if girls were the solution? And so we started gathering what we called a catalytic event, and then it turned into kind of Brave Circles. And Brave Circles are like these supportive communities, and there's Brave Camps now, and there's a Brave Academy, and there's these journals. I mean, there's this whole thing. And anyone, actually, if you're listening to this and you want to do a Brave, I highly recommend it as a strategy to do something now that might disrupt injustice and oppression and this kind of cycle of trafficking, human trafficking and exploitation, and just get there first, you know, just get there first. And I was on my way to this Brave event, which I'm always so excited to go to. And I was reminded, it was sort of the rubber hits the road in a way, where we can wax eloquently about all these incredibly big things, and we can learn principles and we can apply them to our lives, which I hope you're doing, and all that stuff matters. But also at the end of the day, if we don't get there, you know, if there isn't a little girl in Kenya that sees Emily to being able to break the oppression, and instead of waiting till she's like 19, she's like 9 or 10 or 11, and she sees the possibilities and something goes off in her brain. And it's this trajectory that needs to shift, you know. And anyway, I was thinking of my friend Tanis, who spent years and years and years on the streets, heroin addicted, sexually exploited, and all kinds, you know, from escorting to brothels to street level survivor. That's kind of when I met her. And I remember when I heard her full story, you know, I remember her telling me when she's 10 years old, she started adding bleach to her bathwater in the hopes of washing the dirty Indian off of her skin, you know, which will give you a little bit of a tip on how racism erases people's sense of identity and worth. And I remember saying to these girls just, you know, last Saturday, I just said to them, like, I would trade years of my life to get to that bathroom when Tanis was 10 and look her in the eye and say to her, you are the exact right color. You are not that, what they're saying. You are a majestic Cherokee warrior. You are a woman of deep worth. You are a girl who has inherent gifts, who is creative, who discovers, who's curious, who's fun, who's open, who has gifts for this world. You know, would that I could have traded years of my life to get there when she was 10 and say, don't put that in your bath. Because what happened after that, you know, just that little bit of cap of bleach every time I bath, you're coming into agreement with this curse, with this oppression, with this, like, you're not good enough. You're not valuable. You're not worthy. And if we can interrupt it, guys, if we can interrupt it in our own minds, in our own lives, and then we can interrupt it in other people's lives, we can change it. I mean, literally. By the time she's 11, she's already being picked up at a park by a guy who drives her, not home, but drives her somewhere and abuses her. And then to a friend's house, abuses her. And then the trajectory is set. I would trade everything to go back in time and get there first. And it's true of all kinds of different people I've met. Maybe it's true of people that you've met too. But here's what I know to be true. It's true of people we have not met everywhere. We could get there first with a message of goodness, with a message of worthiness, with a message that we care, with a message that they matter, with a message that we're in this together, that they're not alone, you know. And That's what I'm hoping some of this podcast did for you. And I don't know who you are. You know, podcasts are a weird form of communication because they're just kind of like people offering things. And so I don't know where you are, if you're listening to this on a headphone while you're out for a run or in a car or shopping or whatever you're doing. But I do want to say just at the end, you matter. You matter. And what it is specifically that you do matters. And your gifts are inherently good. And you are worthy. And you matter. And so let that be a way that you live. Because I feel like if you can tap into that and you can live from that place, oh man, I can't wait to talk to you about what it meant and what it means still and how it makes your life better, but also everybody else's life better too, as they witness that. And then they're inspired, they're disrupted, and they're inspired by it. And boy, the trajectories we could change together, huh? Let's do it. Thanks again to you who are listening to this. Thanks for being on this journey with us. Also, thanks to Strong Women, Strong World, their world vision movement that gets intentional about the empowerment of women and girls and the ability to change the world that way. And I'm super honored and privileged to be a partner with you in this podcast venture and whatever else we can dream up. And a shout out to all of the women that have been on this podcast. Thank you so much for your gifts and your skills and your, you know, all the things that you're doing, the way that you're living so open-handedly and so inspiringly, inspirational. And thank you. Thanks for taking the time to be part of this. And listener, there's going to be some more stuff coming up soon. But listen, I hope you're going to live in a way that matters now. Don't wait. Do it now. Take care. Hey, speaking of empowering women, the voices of women are often silenced. Or unwanted, or unsupported, or untrained. And we felt like it was time to stop that. So we started a thing called Women Speakers Collective. Women Speakers Collective is a global coaching community. So it's once a month, a coaching and a collective that you join. So you join with other women, but also you're coached in all things communication. And I would say even leadership, all things communication and leadership, because it's all around, you know, knowing who you are and learning about your own skills and then being able to partner and network and collaborate and then using your voice effectively for change and in the sphere that you're called to. People in business take this, people who are preaching, you know, who are on stages, who are doing public presentations, nonprofit leaders, we've had a mayor. We often offer these things called boot camps. Those are 2 days, like jam-packed communication training. So if that's your style, you could look for one of those coming soon. If you need an ongoing support, then the coaching community is for you. All the things. I mean, there's so many things I can't even begin to explain it, but it's an incredible global community of females raising their voice and trying to be the change they want to see in the world and liberating other women in the process. So you're going to want to check that out at womenspeakerscollective.com.